When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sports Illustrated's NBA show, breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix and Rohan Loncrady.
This is the Crossover NBA podcast. I'm Chris Mannix. He is Rohan Loncrady. And Rohan, on today's show, we are going to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks as a legitimate threat in the Eastern Conference. We're going to talk about the New Orleans Pelicans as maybe a legitimate threat in the Western Conference, and all these comparisons that are being made right now with Anthony Edwards and Michael Jordan. Are they fair? We're going to get into that as well. But I want to start the show on a more serious note, a potentially serious note. In the world of Major League Baseball this week, we had a story that's still developing as we record this, where Shohei Ohtani, the superstar pitcher for the LA Dodgers.
SI cover star,
yes. The jinx is alive and well. he is involved in some sort of gambling scandal that involves his interpreter. Now, this story has had a number of different permutations. By the time people listen to it, there might be a new version of it, but somehow, some way, millions of dollars were transferred from Shohei Ohtani's account to his translator, who then funneled them to an illegal gambler. Gambling has infiltrated Major League Baseball's biggest star, global star, in some way. And this scandal broke right around the time that basketball was starting to get touched by it. And you're seeing some public figures in the basketball space start to weigh in on it. So I want to play a couple of clips for you from this week. The first one is from Tyrese Halliburton, the Pacers guard, talking about how he feels like he's viewed by the public. And the second one is from Cavaliers coach J.B. Bickerstaff, who discusses some of his interactions with sports gamblers. Take a listen.
Not everybody cares to hear how we feel, or that's just the point. To half the world, I'm just helping them make money on DraftKings or whatever. You know what I mean? Like I'm a prop. You know what I mean? Like that's what my social media mostly consists of. You know, I think it's important for us to like have somebody to talk to, and like I think all that stuff is like it can be funny sometimes. If somebody's like, you know, I lost $1,000 there, I don't give a you know what I mean? But, I do think that it's important for us to just have conversations with people who really value who we are as human beings. And
we've had our own, I personally have had my own instances with, some of the sports gamblers where, you know, they got my telephone number and were sending me, crazy messages about, you know, where I live and my kids and all that stuff. So it is a dangerous game and a fine line that we're walking for sure. It brings added pressure. It brings a distraction to the game that can be difficult for players, coaches, referees, you know, everybody that's involved in it. And I think that, you know, we really have to be careful, with how close we let it get to the game and the security of the people who are involved in it, because, again, it does carry a weight. A lot of times the people who are gambling, like, this money, you know, pays their light bill or pays their rent, and then the emotions that come from that. So I do think we're walking a very fine line, and we have to be extremely careful in protecting everybody who's involved. There's no doubt about it that it's crossed the line. The amount of times where, you know, I'm standing up there and we may have a 10-point lead and the spread is 11 and people are yelling at me to leave the guys in so that we can cover the spread, like, it's ridiculous. But again, I understand the business side of it, the nature of the business of it, but I mean, it is something that I believe has gone too far.
So, Rohan, it does seem like we're now seeing the consequence of the NBA embracing sports gambling. And to be fair, they're not the only sport out there doing it. Everyone is doing it. Everyone has a deal with DraftKings or FanDuel or somebody else to be involved with sports gambling. And up until now, it's really been mostly upside, right? The revenues have been flowing in. People have had a lot of fun gambling on all this. But when you hear Halliburton say he kind of feels like a prop, or you hear J.B. Bickerstaff say, I get calls from people that have gambled on Cavalier games, hostile calls from them. Do you feel like this is kind of just the tip of the iceberg for where the negative side of sports gambling could come in?
Without a doubt. There's a lot I want to say here, and I want to address your question very directly. Real quick, another thing that has been announced and is apparently going to happen is the NBA wants to add like in-game betting to NBA League Pass, you know, live betting, you know, on different props and whatnot. And I want to address what you have to say. I just need to say real quick, as a longtime NBA League Pass subscriber, someone who's had to move often, you know, can't just very easily get it on my cable, subscribes to the digital version of NBA League Pass. That is such a slap in the face to the League Pass consumer. Like, somebody needs to stand up for the League Pass consumer. Adding in, like, live betting before you fix fast forward and rewind, before you get rid of, like, annoying local blackouts. Just don't get me started on how, like, amateurish the NBA League Pass product is, okay? Like, it's a joke for a billion, multi-billion dollar business to have such a pathetic product as NBA League Pass. And the fact that they're prioritizing adding in-game betting not only shows just, you know, how far the reach of gambling has gotten, but just how easy it would be to fix some of these issues if they really wanted to. So I needed to get that off my chest because I think it's a joke, and the NBA should be embarrassed. As it relates to gambling, though, I know, like, you've joked about, you know, partaking in it, and I know you enjoy it, and I'm, like, perfectly fine with it being legal. I have no issues with it. I think it's better that it's legal and ideally, you know, somewhat regulated than, you know, probably the way it's been happening for the years, for how many years people were gambling on sports illegally. But I think that the NBA and all these leagues are sitting on a huge problem. And you also had Rudy Gobert kind of allude to the fact that, oh, maybe the refs had money on this game and he caught a huge fine for it. I did find Gobert's idea that, like, the refs were conspiring to fix this Cavs-Wolves game a little funny. At the same time, it's not implausible to think something like that could happen, especially when the NBA's had issues with it already. And, you know, I understand the leagues, they're like, if all this gambling is going on, let us get a part of the pie here, and players benefit too, ultimately, because it brings in more revenue to the sport and makes the cap go higher. But I do think the leagues need to seriously reconsider or at least have some sort of plan as to how they're handling all this. You know, I think it's been a topic of discussion on NBA Twitter. Like, these sports books don't exist for people who are good at gambling. Okay, they exist for people to lose money. That's how these companies make money. They want people to think they're placing a casual $20 bet every night, not realizing how much it adds up. The fact that so much of the marketing now revolves around gambling, like I grew up not knowing what a spread was for a very long time, and I found a way to enjoy basketball. And I just think the consequences of this, we don't know what they are. And so the leagues to kind of just zoom so quickly to get into bed with these gambling companies, I think it's going to have unintended consequences, and they're kind of letting it be a wild west right now.
Yeah, look, sports gambling was going to be part of the landscape, whether sports leagues embraced it or not. Like, this was coming. You know, sports gambling has not been legalized because the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball were pushing for it. It's just an evolution of the world. In the same way that, you know, like, marijuana has become, you know, accepted as, you know, a usable drug by sports leagues. It's the same thing. Times change. Things change in the world. So this was coming no matter what. Look, I, as you said, I've been on the record. I embrace sports gambling because I do it in a pretty responsible way. I'm more likely, I'll throw $50 on some kind of stupid parlay, or I'll you know, bet a huge underdog in boxing and hope that a $20 bet pays off to like $1.50. I've never been, look, I work hard for my money. I don't want to lose my, I've never been in that position where I've bet a lot of money and needed something to happen in order to get by in a day. But the reality is there are a lot of people that gamble like that. And because of that, as JB Bickerstaff was alluding to, it becomes, you know, dangerous because you've got all these people that might lose and blame you for it and take it out on you in some way, shape, or form. Now, that might manifest itself in booze and crazy phone calls, but maybe it manifests itself in violence down the line. Like, that's a problem the NBA's got to be on the lookout for. And look, we don't know at this point what happened with Ohtani, so I'll put that on a shelf, but you are naive, not you specifically, but you, the audience, anyone, is naive if you don't think that there is a scandal coming where a player, a referee, a coach is caught feeding information to someone in order to benefit themselves with sports gambling. That is going to happen at some point. The only response I think the NBA can have here is maybe you do pump the brakes a little bit on just how invested you're getting with sports gambling. That probably includes League Pass. I don't think you need to have, you know, live odds on League Pass. I would say this though. I for one am also someone that loves to gamble in game. I've been to a couple of hockey games and I don't know anything about hockey. And I have been bored to tears by hockey games. I'm telling you. And I have wound up like betting the third period of a game. You know, whether we had 1.5 goals in the third period. I mean, I had so much fun because of it. Like, I've been enthralled because of it. So, that part of it's fine. You don't need it on League Pass. You also don't need, like, you know, when the Clippers were announcing their new stadium, mm-hmm. one of the things I thought of was a, you know, ultra-rich, technologically advanced guy like Steve Ballmer might put, like, Microsoft Surfaces on every seat. Like, that kind of stuff. Like, making it part of the in-game experience might be something the NBA should want to pump the brakes on as well. But this is a snowball. This is a rock rolling down the mountain. You are not going to be able to stop this. The doors have been flung wide open, and while the majority of the fallout will be good because there's a lot of revenue coming in to these sports that everyone's going to share from, there is going to be some bad. And when it's bad, it's going to be really ugly for the NBA.
Right. And even it could even happen innocuously. Like, it could even be, you know, something is like, you know, a coach makes an offhand remark to a family member about, you know, someone's going to miss a couple more games than we thought. Like, something like that, you know, there's just so much potential for disaster here. I'm with you. Like, I don't think we need kiosks. You know, everyone's always talked about it's only a matter of time before we allow people to gamble in the arena.
Well, you can at some of them. Like, isn't DC, there's a William Hill Sportsbook in there. There's a FanDuel one in Phoenix. Like, there's...
And I think it's terrible. Like, I really do. And I'm not trying to be, like, the old get-off-my-lawn person here. And, like, I'm not trying to get in the way of anyone who wants to partake in this legally. Like, have at it. If that's how you enjoy spending your money, please do. But, like, there has to be, I think, some level of protection here. Some, at least... artificial wall being put up. I mean, you've seen it in the NFL. Guys have gotten suspended for full seasons, you know, having family members place bets or betting. And, you know, I think one NFL player made the point where it's like, if I can literally like risk my life on Sundays, why can't I bet on my team? I'm not sure I agree with him, but he's also making an interesting point. At the very least, and I'm not the first person to suggest this, it's like, can we do something about the ads? Like, I don't think that this is like something that even just beyond a league level is like great on a societal level, that it's like, if you're 8 years old, like you will only know basketball for the rest of your life is like a vehicle for DraftKings and FanDuel ads. Like, I don't know that that's the way we should be doing all this. So I think there are serious big picture questions the league needs to address. And I don't think they are ignorant to them, but it feels like that hasn't necessarily been a priority other than, you know, making sure that spigot is wide open.
Well, look, cutting back, the problem with that is that you run into the same dilemma you have when you have a discussion about reducing the number of games, which is if you cut back, you're taking money off the table. And both sides have to be okay with that. The spigot being wide open, as you framed it, benefits everybody. Everybody gets a piece of, you know, for lack of a better phrase, a piece of that action. I'm skeptical that we'll see too much restraint shown when it comes to money, right? Like they're going to want to capitalize as much as possible on this gambling wave. I just think they have to put in as many guardrails as they possibly can when it comes to the integrity of a game. And even if they do, it's coming, you know? Baseball, like if this turns out to be more than what the initial reporting was, that Ohtani was first paying off his interpreter's gambling debt. I didn't believe that. Then it was his interpreter stole $4.5 million from him. I sure as shit didn't believe that. Like there's just like, if it turns out to be Ohtani involved with sports gambling, that is a catastrophe for Major League Baseball.
Can we, I know that this is not a baseball podcast, for 1 minute, can we please indulge in somewhat reckless speculation? Like, this Ohtani thing, man, I'm with you. It stinks to high heaven. I have some good friends in this world, and I understand he just signed this massive contract. Like, he really gave this dude $5 million to pay off his gambling debts?
Well, that was the initial story.
And then,
that was the team initial story.
But
when the team, like, it was his team.
Yes.
Ohtani's team that walked it back. Like, this is, whenever you change your story, it means you're searching for an acceptable truth. Like, that, you know, you'd like to give some people the benefit of the doubt and not accuse someone of, you know, illegal or untoward behavior. But if your story is X one day and Y another, that means you're covering up something. It just, that's what it means.
I am fascinated to see how MLB handles that one, because he is by far the biggest star in that sport.
By far.
Yeah, that is going to be very interesting.
All right, let's move on. Talk some basketball here. Last night in Boston, Celtics took on the Bucks. I was at that game last night. Took the red eye from California to watch that game roll on, expecting Giannis to play. Turns out he was scratched from that game with a hamstring injury early in the day. Still turned out to be a pretty good game. The Bucks, you know, rallied in that fourth quarter, blew the doors off the Celtics, frankly, in the fourth quarter. Just came up a little bit short at the end. And look, Boston is a country mile ahead of Milwaukee in the standings in the Eastern Conference. They are most likely going to finish with the best record in the NBA. But, you know, there was a perception, has been a perception, one that I've kind of bought into, that the Celtics were just going to cruise through the Eastern Conference playoffs. Based on what you saw last night between the Celtics and the Bucks, is Milwaukee a greater threat to Boston than originally thought? Are they a threat to Boston if they wind up playing in a conference finals?
I do think they are a threat. At the end of the day, Giannis is such a massive factor in a playoff series. And we saw these teams, I mean, that 2022 series that Milwaukee played without Chris Middleton that went seven games, that ironically Drew Holiday making huge plays for him, Bobby Portis, one of the biggest offensive rebounds in Milwaukee Bucks history in that game five. I mean, they pushed Boston to the limit in that series without Chris Middleton. Now, last night, I don't know if you feel this way. Like, when I watch a game and I find out, like, Giannis is sitting, it's almost like the team that's missing the star can't win. Because if they win the game, you could just be like, oh, the other team didn't get up for it. And if they make it close, you're kind of like, well, it's just hard to take away any meaning from it. But what I saw that I think was really encouraging was the play of Chris Middleton. Mm-hmm. And you remember the first time these two teams matched up. Like, it's not only that Middleton looked worse defensively, it's like the Celtics were hunting him in a way that Chris Middleton, you know, they were hunting him like he was, I'm now going to be like mean to someone in the NBA, but I mean, they were hunting him like he was the worst defender on the floor in a playoff series, the way they were going at him in the post, one-on-one on the perimeter. I thought Middleton had a nice game offensively last night. He shoot like 8 for 11, something like that. Really nice game offensively. Beyond that, like I liked what I saw from him. I like what I've seen from him recently. He looks more fluid. I think the time that they've given him off is paying dividends. So if they get a healthy version of him, and we discussed that, like going forward in the playoffs, that to me is a difference maker. And I think if you're a Bucks fan, that was a really encouraging part about last night, because we know Dame can get hot. We've seen what Giannis can do against the Celtics in a playoff series. And one thing that's interesting about Boston, as great as that starting five is, and as much as, you know, I think we're fans of it, They will be in an interesting position defending Giannis in a playoff series. You know, they might, maybe they'll put Holiday on him. That's something they've done time and time again this year, putting him on bigs. But, you know, that strategy is a little different when it's a Jokic or a Giannis and they're doing that. So I definitely think Milwaukee, that's playing a lot better. Bobby Portis was fantastic last night, is a threat. Absolutely.
You know, after the game, the Bucks said there are no moral victories. You know, that's fine if that's their perception. I thought that was a moral victory from Milwaukee to be down your superstar and to really be in a one possession game with less than a minute left. That's a big win for them. Look, Damian Lillard, you know, just with a good defender on him and Jaylen Brown, he found a way to get 30 points. Like, that was impressive. Chris Middleton not only was pretty good in that game last night, but he also now has like what, a month left in the season to continue to build chemistry with Lillard, with Giannis, with Doc Rivers. So I think that's going to be valuable time that he's going to have. Bobby Portis is really good generally. Like, you know, I was doing some TV last night and I said in the pregame show, I'm like, don't let Bobby Portis get off. Like, this guy's not a slouch. Like, you know, you plug him into the starting lineup, he can play.
So, I'm like cooking the Suns the other day too. Like, yeah, it's been like a little Bobby Portis weak for Portis.
He's a really good player. Pat Connaughton had a better game. So, you know, the Bucks have the horses there. Now, all that being said, I can understand how the Celtics, who, by the way, were without Holiday in that game.
Right.
So they were missing a star of their own.
Yes.
And Sam Hauser. So when...
Okay. Let's not get carried away.
The dude had 10
threes. I see you tried
threes.
To sneak that in. Yeah.
Had 10 threes the other night. I mean, Look, I used to be skeptical of the Celtics rotation guys, the back end of the rotation guys.
The bench is, I mean, Pritchard had a fantastic game. They've gotten some good contribution from those guys.
You know, like that's Pritchard's going off. Porzingis, you know, not the best Porzingis game last night, but he still found a way to make plays down the stretch. So, look, the Celtics, once Giannis went out, I believe that, you know, some of the motivation for that game also went out. Right? Like, you know, I think
it's
after
just a
playing in
thing,
they have played in so many laughers over the last month or so. It's been like 2 weeks since they've lost a game. It's been over a month until last night that they won a game in single digits. So they have just been cruising through everyone, especially teams in the Eastern Conference. So I can understand Giannis goes down. They a little bit of life goes out. Then they're up big going into the fourth quarter. You know, there's a lot of ways to explain why the Bucks came back. But I think if you're Milwaukee, you take away that this Celtics team is beatable, right? You were on their home floor, down Giannis in a one-possession game in the closing minutes. So that's what I take away if I'm Milwaukee. Now, one of the storylines that's emerged over the last couple of days that I want to get your take on is that the vulnerability of the Celtics is that they don't have a guy that can close games down the stretch. And that's been kind of a pretty strong finger pointed at Jason Tatum, saying Jason Tatum, as great as he is, all NBA first team probably, he is not the guy that you'd want closing games, or he has some vulnerability there. What's your take on that?
Okay, so let me preface this by saying, as you know, I've made it my life's work to kind of spot Boston propaganda whenever I can see it. Fight back against all the stuff coming out from over there. It's no secret that I grew up in South Florida. Some people may describe me as a Heat fan. You know, I'll let them do that if that's
some
the
people.
Perception. So I have, you know, every reason to hate on Jason Tatum. It's long been my opinion that Udonis Haslam would have locked up Bill Russell. Having said all of that, I think people are like bored. When they talk about the Celtics, I think people are bored. I think they're looking for a reason to think that this team like can't get it done, as if, and listen, LeBron James pointed this out. It's like Tatum's own success is being held against him because he's just so good that he takes the team to the conference finals every year. People are like, well, he can't get it done. It's like, yo, he is 25, right? What is it? 25 or 26 now? And most players would just be entering their contention window of like 6-7 years at this point. He's just been a good player on good teams that can get his team this far that it's almost being held against him. And I, you know, I've even seen like, you know, I've seen fans down here be like, Tatum can't get it done. Like, Tatum has played two of the most incredible road game sixes in recent memory in Milwaukee, down 3-2, saved their season. What are you, like 40 in that game? Unbelievable performance. And then The Sixers game last year, terrible for 46 minutes. Last 2 minutes of the game snatched it away from the Sixers while Embiid and Harden just choked away another playoff win. To me, the idea that he can't get it done, they shoot too many threes, they can't do this, blah, blah, blah. Like, this team is a juggernaut. They are a heavy favorite, and they should be. And a lot of that starts with the fact that Tatum, he's either going to take your worst defender in the post and you're going to double. He's going to hit a bunch of pull-up threes. He's improving as a playmaker. I just think people are, like, deeply, profoundly searching for ways to say why the Celtics won't get it done. Like, if they lose, I don't think that's going to be the reason why.
No, it's not. And I agree with everything that you said there. Now, some of Tatum's critics have pointed to some of the clutch time advanced numbers on Tatum not being very good. But look, as a writer, you know, you can find statistics to back up virtually any argument. What I go with is what I see in some of these games. And you brought up two good ones, right? The game against Milwaukee 2 years ago, down 3-2, Bucks at home, and Tatum goes for 46. The game against game six against Philadelphia last year, where Tatum stinks for three quarters and then goes off in the fourth to help them win the game. The next game, Tatum had 51 points in game seven.
Yes.
That's a clutch performance. Now, fast forward to the conference finals against Miami. In the three games the Celtics won to rally back to even the series, Tatum had 80-something points in those three games. And even though he wasn't good in game seven, that had as much to do in the very first play of the game. Jason Tatum gets injured and isn't the same player throughout. So let's stop with this Jason Tatum is not clutch. Jason Tatum is a potential liability. You can't rattle off more than a handful of guys that are more effective offensively than Jason Tatum. And the reason that Tatum's numbers are in the 30 plus per game is because he has sacrificed this year. He has taken a step back so Porzingis can average 20 points per game. So Jaylen Brown can continue to develop. So Jrue Holiday can find his role with this team. Jason Tatum could easily be averaging 30 or more points per game. He isn't because he's been a good team player. So fourth quarter, end of game situations, I still like Jason Tatum. Look at that end of that Milwaukee game. It wasn't a flawless finish for the Celtics, but Jason Tatum had 8 points over the final 2 minutes and 6 seconds. 8 points over 2+ minutes is a great number. So I'm not here for that. That is not going to be the downfall of the Boston Celtics. Jason Tatum's inability to get it done in the fourth quarter.
All I'll say is, like, at the end of the day, look at how he's defended and how much attention teams are giving him in fourth quarters, and that lets you know all you need to know about how teams are scared of his ability to make shots from anywhere on the floor in the final few minutes of a game. Now, let me just say, having said all that we said, if either them or the Bucks can't get it done this year, oh, man, then the critics will, big time, big time.
All right, speaking of getting it done, we all look at the Western Conference standings and say, all right, it's Denver's world, and we're just living in it, right? And then you look at Oklahoma City and you say the Clippers, okay, there are two teams that, you know, could make a run. Maybe Phoenix gets their act together, makes a run in the back of the Western Conference bracket. There is not enough attention being paid to the New Orleans Pelicans right now, who are playing outstanding basketball and have been playing outstanding basketball really since January 1st, if you look at the numbers. I'm going to read you some of the numbers from January 1. Since the new year, the Pelicans are third in net rating, fourth in offensive rating, fourth in defensive rating, third in plus-minus per game, fourth in steals, fifth in three-point percentage, seventh in field goal percentage, seventh in rebounds, whole bunch of great numbers. They are excellent on the road, 22 road wins this year, third most in the NBA, and they are blowing a lot of teams out. They rank second in the NBA in most double-digit wins this season. Zion Williamson is back on that trajectory that we thought he was going to be on, becoming a superstar in this league. Brandon Ingram, I think, is as good a number two guy, maybe not as good as you can get, but a really, really good number two guy on that team. CJ McCollum, he works. Should we consider the Pelicans a legitimate threat, not just to go deep in the playoffs, but to advance all the way to the finals with the team they have this year?
Man, it's a really good question. And, you know, like Dan Devine was on this pod last week and we started talking about the Pelicans case a little bit. And as you mentioned, they've just kept rolling even more since. It's remarkable what they've done. What worries me about the Pelicans a little bit, Chris, is like they had that great playoff series against the Suns 2 years ago, 2022, that first round series, pushed Phoenix quite a bit, clearly got under their skin. And then, you know, things kind of, the wheels kind of fell off last year. They had injuries, Zion was out. Like, they were first in the West in December, and then things kind of went awry. Man, the West is just such a gauntlet. Like, if they catch the wrong first-round playoff series, like, I think right now it's kind of in vogue to say maybe the Clippers. I think there was a time where it was like, wait, tough, they're the biggest threat. Yeah, now all of a sudden it's like people are doubting the Clippers, but like I don't want to see them in the first round.
Well, the Clippers, though, Clippers are 4-5. That, right now, as we record this, 4-5 matchups, Clippers-Pelicans, which is phenomenal.
That's a great first-round matchup. I have, at this current moment, I don't know who I would pick in that series. It would be really hard to pick against Kawhi in that scenario, but well, who knows where Kawhi is going to be a month from now. So this is all a very long-winded way of saying it feels impossible to handicap the West, but what I really like about New Orleans is all the depth they have and the different ways they can match up with teams in the postseason. I think it's going to be really interesting. We still haven't seen Zion had to play a like great defensive playoff series. And that being such an unknown to me, it casts doubts on how far I think they can go. But I mean, they've been playing their ass off. There's no question about it.
Look, they've got a legit superstar in Zion. They are one of the best isolation teams in the NBA, which matters in the playoffs because a lot of times it does devolve into isolation ball. Zion and Ingram are two elite isolation players. CJ McCollum has been shooting the three terrific this season, and they have perimeter defenders. They've got Herb Jones. They've got Najee Marshall. Like, they've got guys that can get stops for you on the perimeter. They've got a bunch of floor spacers in addition out there as well. And if you want to go big against them, whether it's Denver or anybody else, you know, Valanciunas is still there to be that big body that can be a deterrent to, you know, whoever it is, whether it's Zubac in the Clippers series or Nikola Jokic, you know, down the line. Look, because it's the Western Conference, yeah, they're a threat to lose in the first round. There's no doubt about that. Like, it wouldn't be an upset if they lost in the first round if they played the Clippers right now. But when I look at this Pelicans team, I see depth. Their bench has been electric all season long. I see shooting. You know, Trey Murphy in that mix. He has been fantastic. I just see a whole bunch of guys that can get it done. And maybe they're not mature enough yet, you know, for a deep playoff run. This will be kind of, if they're fully healthy going to the playoffs, it'll be one of the first years they're able to do that. But man, the talent's there. And Zion is as difficult a player to game plan for as there is in the NBA. When he gets that ball going downhill, you can throw Giannis into this equation. There's nobody harder to stop than Zion going to the basket. I mean, his numbers in the restricted area are insane this year. So they're a legitimate team right now.
And Zion deserves a ton of credit because he was getting killed.
Can we stop after that in-season tournament? The Zion is fat stuff is still out there all the time. He's never going to be like, you know, slim. Like, you know, you're not going to see him undergo a weight transformation where he drops 50 pounds and is able to play like small forward for stretches. Like, that's not him. He's always going to be a big guy. Can he be in better shape, or could he have been in better shape to start the season? Absolutely. That's something he's going to have to address moving forward because you can't work your way back into shape during the season. But when I watch him, looks fine to me. Like, still looks like, you know, an elite player to me for the minutes he's playing.
No, I think he looks great, and I think for him to respond to that just like mountain of criticism, a lot of it unfair, is really impressive, and good for him, because when he's on, man, he's still one of the most exciting players in the NBA, and that's a fun team to watch, man. Like, you mentioned how they got like spacers and defenders like Herb Jones, Jose Alvarado. Like, that is a fun, gritty-ass team that I excited to see them fully healthy in the playoffs for sure.
All right, last thing for you. Anthony Edwards has been having himself a pretty good week. Just absolutely posterized John Collins in that game against Utah. That was as vicious a dunk as I've seen.
Okay, hold on. I'm just going to say it. It wasn't a dunk to me, Chris. I just have to get off my chest.
The throw down versus the dunk. I know you have this bug up your ass about, you know, whether it's a dunk or
I
not.
I do.
But he elevated and he threw it down.
It was a poster. It was a poster.
It's Blake Griffin over Mozgov and you know, some of that stuff that we've seen in the past. Anyway, he's having himself a good week. The Timberwolves are surging, even with Karl-Anthony Towns out of the rotation, which has increased the amount of praise being heaped on young Anthony Edwards, with some in the media comparing him favorably to Michael Jordan, of all players. I know Chris Broussard over at Fox said he contacted Michael Jordan, and Jordan said there were some similarities. I'd love to know what that exchange actually looked like. Edwards is a star. I would probably put him more on the Kobe, Dwayne Wade type of level right now, because Jordan is rarefied air. I mean, that's arguably the greatest player of all time, and Anthony Edwards has not accomplished anything really at this point. Like, he hasn't made a deep playoff run. He hasn't done anything. So you can't put him up there with Jordan just yet, but his skill set is complete. When he's on his game defensively, he's as good as anyone in the NBA. He's got great instincts. He's got great length. He can do a lot of things on the defensive side, and offensively, he's, you know, pretty damn special. So, are we heaping too much praise on Anthony Edwards right now, this early in his career?
I mean, yes and no. I understand people who say there's like similarities to Michael Jordan in the sense of, like, obviously he's got this like jump out of the gym athleticism that I think for a lot of people is reminiscent of a young Jordan. I think Kobe and Dwayne Wade even had that element to their game that people compare to MJ in their time. So I understand it from that. You know, I think he has a great personality. It's not necessarily MJ-like, but I think he has that charisma that people are drawn to that Michael Jordan had. So I understand the people who say similarities. I'm kind of with you, though. It's like, we should just stop using Michael Jordan as example. Like, nothing good can come from it. Like, nothing good can come from, like, Anthony Edwards trying to, like, compare himself to Michael Jordan for his entire career. That's not to say, though, I think he's an incredibly fun player. I love his attitude. The competitiveness is another thing I love from him. I mean, you mentioned the defense. Like, you see, like, late in games, one-on-one situations, when he's matched up with other teams' best guys, like, he wants that. You know, he's ready to go at them in those situations. It's not just on the offensive end. So I love his game. Love the attitude he plays with. Love that he has, like, the personality to be a legitimate star for the NBA. It feels like a long time since someone as fun as him has come along, but like it's not gonna do anyone any favors to like let this MJ thing play out. That yes, there are similarities, but let's just leave it at that. Let's try to be normal about this.
Yeah, I mean, physically there are similarities. Stylistically there are similarities, and Edwards is unquestionably on and an ascent. He's averaging 26.7 points this year. That's a career high. His field goal percentage is a career high. His three-point percentage is a career high. He's up to almost 37.5% from three this year. I mean, there's not much this guy isn't doing this season. And I do love that he's been able to kind of strap this team on his back offensively during Towns' absence and you know, keep them in that top three mix in the Western Conference.
They're right there, man. Only 1.5 games out of first.
I mean,
they're impressive.
We'll see how long, you know, we'll see if they can stay at that, if they can get to that number one spot. The Towns injury just kills them. Like, they've been better defensively, but worse statistically offensively. Anyway, Edwards, let's see him get to that, like, D-Wade level first. Like, that's still a Hall of Fame level. Like, let's get to the Hall of Fame D-Wade, you know, Kobe level first before we start talking about Jordan. Let's also see what he does in the postseason. Like, wherever the Timberwolves wind up, it's going to be a brutal first round matchup, you know, where they get
especially if Towns is out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, let's see if he has that in him. But, you know, there's nothing to complain about with Anthony Edwards right now. He is just dynamic. No question about that.
Oh, man. Could you imagine if we got like Luka and Ant Edwards in the first round?
I love every single potential first round matchup in the Western Conference. I mean, the Western Conference, you know, even just talking about like Clippers, Pelicans in the first round, that's a legitimate conference finals matchup. Right now, 3-6 is Timberwolves, Kings. Like, that's great defense against, you know, perennially great offense. You know, Nuggets, Mavericks in the first round. Luka
Thunder, Suns. Imagine KD going back to OKC in a playoff
series. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. And that leaves the Warriors and the Lakers out.
Yeah.
Which who knows what's going to happen on that end. But yeah, the Western Conference playoffs is going to be a lot of fun. So, all right, we will be back this time next week. Until then, enjoy the games.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.